Alright, and you're back to the Burns Cave for Stardub 216. I'm Andy.
Hello, I'm Ralph. Welcome to this podcast.
Now, the reason that Ralph sounds a little bit subdued is friend of the show and regular purveyor of things we might want to talk about, little Philip Ayers, has sent us a DVD. He's actually sent us two, but we only watched one of them today. What is that DVD, Ralph?
As you may recall, the exciting cliffhanger 2 weeks ago was that we were about to watch a RoboCop DVD. This is part of the Prime Directive's mini-series from the Space Year 2000, which consisted of four fabulous feature-length adventures. The one we were saying was called Dark Justice, and it sounds tremendously exciting.
Sell it to the listeners back home.
First of all, hello to Nick Roche. Yes. Secondly, Dark Justice. Here's the blurb on the back of the DVD case of this movie, what we have just watched. Serve the public trust, protect the innocent, uphold the law. Dark Justice. Delta City has become a futuristic city, owned and operated by OCP. RoboCop, Alex Murphy, finds himself nearly obsolete and has begun to feel his age. Murphy's former partner, another former partner, John Cable, has returned to Delta City as his new security commander, and they begin an investigation into a mysterious villain known as the Bone Machine. Now, before we proceed, this exciting Poundland DVD is Region Zero, which means that you, yes you, dear listener, no matter what country you're in, can view this exciting motion picture televisual experience. So, RoboCop. I think before we delve into the delights of Dark Justice, let's remind ourselves of when RoboCop was, well, good.
Okay, so RoboCop was created by Edward Neumeier and Michael Miner, who'd been pitching it for years, and it was only when Orion hit success with Terminator that it got greenlit. The design of the suit and 809 was by a talented chap called Rob Bottin, who was also responsible for most of the effects in John Carpenter's The Thing. It was directed by a crazy Dutch person, Paul Verhoeven.
I love it for the Starship Troopers and the Total Recall.
And of course, Showgirls.
I haven't seen Showgirls. I actually haven't. I'm aware of the existence of Showgirls, and I've seen many excerpts from Showgirls.
I believe we will have to procure that for a future Stardom.
I can barely wait.
So, basically, RoboCop is OCP, this evil mega corporation. It's in the 80s, after all, it was made. Are in a position to almost own Detroit City. So basically what they're trying to do is engineer the robot. They start off doing security programs using the Ed-209, which is kind of a military droid, looks amazing. Mm-hmm. But it kind of malfunctions in the boardroom and turns a man into a hamburger.
Which is unfortunate.
And so the other alternative was the RoboCop program, which was to take a wounded, dead cop and build him into a cyborg. And that's what RoboCop is. But the best thing about the film is it was a satire on the 80s, a remarkably prescient one, however.
Yes, a lot of the film featured excerpts from the news programming of the Detroit City and the satire about guns and violence and
hyper-commercialism.
Hyper-commercialism. And the unfortunate thing is that, Fox News is basically that film, but real.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was well done. It's an amazing film. Still want to enjoy it this day. And because it did so well,
there's been a plethora of spin-offs.
Yes, you've had RoboCop 2,
RoboCop 3, the live-action miniseries, the first RoboCop cartoon, and that's right, the second RoboCop cartoon. There was also a range of exciting action figures and toys for the kids, you know, and lots of RoboCop comics, of which only one is any good.
Yes, we speak, of course, of RoboCop vs. Terminator by Frank Horse Miller and Walt Thor Simonson.
Which is a genuinely good 4 issues in and out, proper, honest-to-goodness, high-quality comic, which the title might not think you're getting a high-quality comic, or the fact it says RoboCop on the front might not think you're getting a high-quality comic, but it's worth tracking down. It's a shame it's not actually currently commercially available in either a trade or a legally digital format.
Yes, the RoboCop comic from Marvel was hampered by one great stumbling block. The editor of the RoboCop comic was the writer of Deathlok, which was basically a man put in a cyborg body hunting down and killing people. You know, Marvel's owned one, but they have to pay license fees. So many a story, by all accounts, that was pitched by Messrs. Grant and Sullivan to the Celsium editor was spiked because they were doing something similar in Deathlok. So you kind of see why the Marvel comic didn't quite hit the stride, because it was Alan Grant doing the scripting. No
Alan Grant, script, I believe, can write.
Strontium Dog, Just Dread, Judge Anderson, Batman, Detective Comics, Lobo. I can continue. And then, of course, it was then taken over by a great influence to both of us, Simon Furman.
Oh, we love the Furman.
Indeed, purveyor of brute force.
It's a good firmament to have beneath your feet.
Indeed. Anyway,
which brings us to the last, until the reboot June next year, in production, the last sort of actual official Robocop filmed material, because Dynamite published comics, I believe, none of which I read currently. So there is Robocop media out there, but in terms of actual film production, it came to a screeching halt in the space year of 2000, when Robocop Productions, that's right, that was her name, were formed in Canada land to produce four television films, which had a linking storyline through them, and was hopefully seen as a resurgence of Robocop, because at the time the producers had said, well, it's been done sort of for the kids in live action and comics, and we want to try and get back some of what the original film had and restore Robocop to his roots. I'm paraphrasing interviews at the time, but
that was a bit of an edge back.
Yeah, that was general idea. So it was so the violence was put back up a bit, the satire was put back up a bit, and the lighting was dimmed considerably, which we'll get onto a great length shortly.
Now we need to ask, what do you like best about Robocop? Do you like him going about shooting things with that gun, making quippy sound bites that aren't intentional, because Carter's not deliberately trying to be funny? Do you like that?
I like it when it's basically Judge Dredd with the trademarks filed off and he's doing all the killing and he has the four directors and he's got a big gun and he's going, you're more creep, and stuff like that. I enjoy that. I don't give a toss about him when he was having flashbacks to his previous life as a cop when he was a nobody character, because the whole point of Robocop is he was supposed to be a nobody character. He only becomes a proper character when he becomes, well, Robocop.
So what you're saying to me is that the idea of a 90-minute TV movie, miniseries episode, where predominantly you'll either see him sitting in his chair or walking along the corridor, doesn't really appeal to you.
I would say that would not be an exciting prospect, because him sitting in a chair, feeling sad about himself in a dark room, being ministered upon by a bint and a turtleneck who's extremely old and thus not filthy and pleasant, and him walking down the corridor going, ooh, I can't go down that corridor, going back to sit in his chair, then ruminating a bit more, then going back down the corridor again, then going, oh, I can't. And in the third attempt to get down the corridor, actually gets out and does some killing. I would say such a production would perhaps not meet my thrillometer expectations. You would be correct. That would be Dark Justice Day. Now, you want to like it, because
it's Robocop, we are the age that's kind of, as Ralph has alluded to, it is Judge Dredd with the serial numbers filed off precisely when it came out. Many of the Judge Dredd people involved in it who'd been looking for a film just said, well, there's our Judge Dredd film.
To the point where actually in real life it did sink the Judge Dredd film for a few years actually, because generally people did go, well, they've made it.
Yes.
So let's hold off on it for a while and look what happened when they finally did make a Dredd film. But that was a podcast we've done previously.
And amazing.
It was not. Yes, that was a bad film. So, and also, you didn't get the feeling beneath the PR bluff at the time, because, to be honest, only people who reported on this were the science fiction magazines at the time. It was not picked up on by the wider press. Is that there at least was some attempt to actually make something, well, decent.
something with a little bit more substance than you would think.
Well, there are several things happening. First of all, is the lighting.
Now, we're fans of Doctor Who.
We are.
We have seen it for, well, pretty much as long as we can watch TV. To be honest, we are the kind of...
I have seen every single episode ever made, and in the cases where episodes no longer exist, I have seen the telly snaps, read the novel, listened to the soundtracks that are available.
I'm not far behind.
I am
behind.
The hardy hardcore.
I'm not far behind on that. But Doctor Who in the 80s, which is kind of where we watched it, had a problem with lighting.
As in it was too bright.
Everything was overlit from those lighting riggings in BBC studios, and very few studios managed to get someone with a bit of a sense of aesthetics and mood lighting who would dick about with the lighting. So it was just kind of, right, So we get the feeling that the people involved in this saw that as well and thought, they went a little bit too far that way. Let's go the other way. And did they? Oh boy.
Is it a night scene?
It's night all the time in Delta City. No matter what time of day.
It's like,
even in flashbacks it's dark.
It's true. It's like you walk in a house in real life and it won't be a blazing light, but your eyes will pick out what's going on. Characters on this, they walk in the room and we can't see what's going on. And you're just like, bleh. So that's one of the problems with it. The second problem, the most important problem, is that Robocop is a smurf. That's right, he's a small dude. When he's walking down that corridor, he tries to escape many a time. Boof, boof. He's not even doing the proper boof, 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 boof. It's the Foley shots. It's more like ching, 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 ching. No, it's not even like a good ching, ching. It's more like a sort of...
It misses
it. Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
But he's about 5 foot. He's the same height as us.
Yes, he's tiny.
There's an executive who looks at him who is about 6'3", 6'4".
He's looking at his
forehead. Down at him and you're like, no, that is wrong. Even if you've got a midgety bastard as Robocop.
Also, one of the exciting revelations of this production is that OCP is evil and is run by evil people, which, believe it or not, is actually meant to be our sort of twist.
Hold on a minute.
Uh-huh.
What? We get shocked there. OCP are evil.
Apparently they're evil.
You are shit.
I'm sorry, but it's true. They are. There was a whole plot thread revealing the evilness within OCP. In particular, there might have been a filthy redhead. I couldn't really tell.
Because it was so dark.
What was going on? So, there's that. There's an opportunity for innuendo, because the character is called the Bone Machine.
Yeah.
But they don't really go for it. The satire doesn't work because it's too forced. And also not funny.
And the revelation is that the Bone Machine is a cop that got kicked off the force who was previously involved with Murphy and John Cable, the old partner. But you really don't find that out except in an offhand moment, but there's no payoff. None of the flashbacks actually tell... The flashbacks tell you that Cable was a slightly questionable guy in an end justifies the means kind of way, which, given his work, you can understand that might be a viewpoint. But apparently the other guy becomes the Bone Machine... It goes too far and gets kicked off the force. But you don't see any of this in any of the flashbacks. Story writing fail 101.
Sometimes you even get flashbacks to the flashbacks of the flashback.
Yes, and unfortunately whoever's editing and pacing this is a flashback ends and instead of going to back to present day, cuts to one of the media break gags. And you're like, no, your internal consistency means I need to be back in the real world for that to happen. Also, the Bone Machine himself is basically, this is going to be really, really, really obscure, but if you read Action Force Monthly, I believe it's issue 3, The Cold Place, the one that was drawn by Jerry Paris,
mm-hmm.
and you get a stupid scientist who's basically got two big massive guns on his arm.
That is correct.
That is the Bone Machine, except he's got the helmet of the skull helmet of the general from Willow.
Yep. Probably half his face.
Yes. And so this pudgy fat bastard's face is on show. So during the point where there's a gun battle with Cable trying to kill him and Robocop struggling against a directive to kill Cable that's been put in by a shady OCP representative, doesn't shoot him in the face. You know that exposed bit of flesh that you can just go, oh, I'll batter that.
Yeah.
To the point where there's a hostage situation where Cable is being held and he tells Murphy to take the shot. So Murphy, instead of going up and shooting the fat bastard in the face, uses armour piercing to go through Cable to damage the fat bastard, then kills him.
So it can have pathos.
But however, he does go all Wolverine on the guy at the end with his little...
Yeah, that's right. That was the one moment of joy, because it was the one unexpected bit of whoa there, where the evil villain was like, I'll get you, Robocop. Robocop's like, serving public trust, this kind of stuff. And you think, oh, Robocop's going to get shot in the face, what's he going to do, is he going to just shoot the other guy in the face? But no, he extends his chiv from his hand and just sets about him.
And he does, gives it loudly.
And it says something where I actually look upon a man being knifed to death to actually find some enjoyment. So that was Robocop Dark Justice. We do believe that Little Philip Ayers has machinations afoot to make us watch the other three Robocop films. But to be honest, unless we find something particularly astonishingly good, you will never hear about them ever again on this particular podcast type affair.
Yes, other Robocop products are available. And it does have the... It is, we remarked upon earlier while we were watching it, is that
The effective RoboCop spin-offs are to make what came before it even better. We remarked this, RoboCop 3 is not that bad.
That's right, actually, that's it. Actually made me feel nostalgic for RoboCop 3. I've never felt nostalgic for RoboCop 3 before. And never before have I thought, hey, you know that bit in that film where RoboCop fights the robot ninja? That doesn't seem so bad now. Because at least the guy in the RoboCop suit was putting some effort in.
And also, you could see what was going on. Now, you shouldn't ever be thinking good things about RoboCop 3. RoboCop 2, I can see why some people like it, RoboCop 3, no, you shouldn't. It's bad. And the TV series with that Pudface Borg and all that pish when it was on Channel 5, you shouldn't be thinking good thoughts about that, ever. It's just not healthy.
So talking of good thoughts, let's move on.
We're going to get something that's going to bring some joy.
We're going to move on, yes, let's move on to something that brings up some joy. So, let's move on. Back to our friends from Oxfam.
We like our friends from Oxfam.
My love friends from Oxfam, he says, as he peels the sticker off in an incredibly, never mind, audio-friendly manner. I speak about an obscure book, which I did not know existed until I found it in Oxfam a few weeks ago. Now, some of the joy of this might be slightly lost in the medium we're using to report
on. Now, why would something in a book be lost on the audio medium? Surely we can read out from the book.
We can read out bits of the book, that's not a problem.
So
however,
what is it that's lost? We can describe illustrations.
This is the Walt Disney Studios The Black Hole, a pop-up book.
A pop-up book, you say.
Now, what's remarkable about pop-up books is, first of all, that they're good. But secondly, that even if you try and buy a pop-up book when it's brand new, as in literally just been published, week of release, go to a bookshop to buy it and it'll be mobbed. Because some idiot will go and they'll pull all the bits out. Now, what's even more remarkable is that this book was published in 1980 and is completely intact. In fact, I think this was bought in 1880, read once and shoved in a cupboard. So that's the pop-up aspects of it. It's intact. But let's tell you more about it. Now, we can tell you more about it firstly by saying it is of course based on Disney's film of The Black Hole. And the best way to tell you about it is just to read to you the description on the back of this book. Now, the front of the book is rather splendid. Hardy cover, always good. We've got an exciting looking spaceship, all black and sort of golden, hovering near a kaleidoscope of colour, which is the black hole itself. The black hole which exists in our minds, not the one in reality, and frankly the one that's more exciting. Now, tells us on the back here. On the outer reaches of the galaxy, the protagonists in this thrilling adventure battle to save themselves from being drawn into the black hole. We can't see your hands.
Oh, sorry. I did the hand movement, so I should go, dun, dun, dun.
Captain Dan Holland, commander of the Palomino, is a shrewd, brave, and experienced space pilot. Dr. Hans Reinhardt commands the Cygnus, a scientific genius. He has an insane plan to explore the black hole and beyond. Charles Pizer is Captain Holland's first officer. Young and brash, Pizer is nonetheless an efficient and brave officer.
Could be Kirk.
Dr. Kate McCrae, an attractive and lively addition to the Palomino's crew, is also a talented astrogeophysicist.
Sexual tension.
Dr. Alex... She's not a sexual tension, I've seen this film. No sex.
Laser.
I don't recall. Dr. You love that DVD somewhere around here. Dr. Alex Durant is the brilliant and gifted chief scientist of the Palomino, and there's no other description, he's a bit of shit.
Background character.
Harry Booth, a sharp-tongued journalist, is preparing a report on the Palomino's mission. Then we come on to the three most important characters.
Yes.
Vincent, V.I.N.Sent's name means vital information necessary, centralised. No, that's no.
Vincent's Ron McDowell, is
it? It's another Bob.
What?
No, you're right, it's Vincent, sorry.
Yeah, it's
Vincent. Robocop did things to my head. He is a valuable member of the Palomino's crew. I can call this back. I can bring this back in. Editing.
Editing? Start up.
Old Bob B.O.B.
B.
I'm confused by It's so difficult. An earlier version.
You're like a hand reading the top of the book.
I'm always done. An earlier version of Vincent's robot model is a reluctant member of Reinhardt's crew on Cygnus. And lastly, but not least, Maximilian is a massive monster robot controlled by Reinhardt to assist him with his mad schemes.
Oh, scary.
So, generally, the plot of the Black Hole pop-up book is remarkably similar to the actual film.
Shock horror.
And it reveals that returning to Earth from an unsuccessful mission to discover life in other worlds, the USS Palomino is racing through space. And the scientists on board, they want to collect data on a black hole because they're curious. Then Vincent the robot detects the huge ship, this is the USS Cygnus. It was lost many years ago in the port mission. They try and get closer, there's stresses from the black hole. Topol appears, doesn't sing.
Doesn't also impersonate Zarkov from the Black Hole.
Not at all. He's the evil Dr. Reinhardt, and he has Maximilian, this red robot. And basically, what ensues is adventure, and escapism, and joy, and Roddy McDowell. But in a book format. What's really exciting about this book is that things pop up.
And they're also intact.
They're also intact, as I said earlier. Now, should you track down this book, you can do such exciting things as you can make the spaceship pop up at you. You can actually move the black hole itself to simulate what's going on. You can move Maximilian, the evil robot. Now,
by this point, nobody knows he's evil. He's just a big red robot.
No, to put it in context, as a child, I was incredibly frightened by Maximilian. Because he was a big red robot and he moved about and he was the embodiment of the devil itself. And he actually is meant to be a metaphor for...
There's a subtext that Disney liked to downplay, which is, you know where the black hole is? It's hell.
It's hell. And yes, they go through it and they escape into heaven.
Basically, everybody dies.
Yeah. It is actually a subtext. It's not actually us reading into it. It's actually in there in the film.
And it's something that's been alluded, that's been spoken about by the people that were involved
yes,
in it.
Yes. So the very fact that I can move a lever and make Maximilian the robot dance to my tune helps absolve some childhood fear, actually. You also have Vincent when Dell is popping up and waving at me here, which is always exciting, always like that. You can also make Roddy McDowell himself move to your command by moving a tab and making his eyes pop up and down slightly, but it is a very old book, but it's still intact. You can make evil robot dudes appear. Also, it's got very nice painted artwork actually for its time, credited to absolutely nobody, which is a bit of a shame.
The thing is, this is of the age where, you know what? They didn't skimp on the stuff, it was done to
yes, a very high quality actually. It's not just done with film grabs or stuff, it's actual proper painted artwork. Proper binding. The fact, as I said, the fact that this is a throwaway disposable film tie-in for a kind of obscure film that is intact almost 30 years later. Over 30 years later that I picked up mint is incredible, and the artwork's fantastic. I mean, you can make the spaceship basically cut out the page at you.
There's a chap dangling on a bit of string.
So, it's a hallmark to modern aesthetic. Now, here, Andy has found the most exciting page of all. No, the other page.
That's a good page.
That is a good page. Well, what,
I can make a bank of computers fall on Dr. Reinhardt.
Oh, Topol's been defeated. But even better is you can control via leader Roddy McDowell as Vincent, and you can make him attack Maximilian himself by hitting him with a robot wand.
And making flames appear.
Which is good for children, but again, for making flames appear, also, it makes sound effects, which is exciting. And it absolves a lot of...
Take some of the terror away from the film if you saw it.
It does, yeah. In fact, to this day, I still can't watch The Black Hole with a film of fear, despite being 34 years old, says something. And it's good to have a high-quality merchandise item, because The Black Hole itself is, sadly, pretty obscure these days. People like us know what it is, and children might have a fond memory of this space film they saw on a Sunday afternoon. But to be honest, it's one of Disney's better film efforts. Now, I abhor Disney with all my fiery heart, and generally find a lot of the output to be rather anodyne. There's nothing wrong with being family friendly. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with putting out all ages films that appeal to the young and old and don't offend. But I like something with a bit of a bite to it, a bit of an actual popular adventure.
Again, it's why you tend to, for like short cartoons, we're old enough now that we got a lot of the shorts still on normal TV before obviously you had Cartoon Network and the Disney Channel like. So you frequently get to Philips spaces and TV scheduling short cartoons, more predominantly on ITV than anyone else.
Yep.
And you would either get a short Warner Brothers cartoon or a short Disney cartoon. I preferred the Warner Bros. Cartoon.
Yeah.
And it was actually sometimes when you knew it was on TV, it was a highlight to watch that 5-10 minutes of cartoon that you get that day. Almost unheard of now.
Sadly it is. So generally in conclusion we'd say, find the black hole, it's on DVD very cheap. There's also, not put up by me, but I have noticed there is a very good White Queen ripped from the DVD print on YouTube. Available in its entirety, so go and watch that if you haven't got £3 for the DVD, or indeed if you're in a region where it's not available. It's actually worth a watch. If you can take your cynicism away a wee bit, just imagine yourself being 8 years old, it's kind of cool. The Black Hole's kind of cool, and it actually has a bit more going on. There's very good practical effects.
Yes.
And Roddy McDowall, it was using Roddy McDowall's I'll Do Anything phase, but he's very good, top all is very good. And the Black Hole, a pop-up book, is a rare piece of merchandise from that film, but also a really good piece of merchandise from that film. So once again, hooray to Oxfam, and whoever donated this to the shop.
Yes, well done then.
Well done them. So we brought you some joy, and now it's time for Andy to bring you something else.
It might not necessarily not be joy, it just depends on your mileage. It's a comic from the 90s.
Yeah.
Don't cry about
it. Does it have cross hatching?
No, there's cross hatching on this. It's even got trading cards inside it.
I like the trading cards.
Now, DC have relaunched Your Mileage May Vary, the new 52, and one of their former studios was Wildstorm, which was previously an imprint of Image Comics.
Mm.
And one of the most prominent comics to come out of the Wildstorm Studios that was basically co-created by the founder of said studio was Wildcats, a chap called Jim Lee.
Wildcats, that obscure cartoon show? Is that what you're talking about?
No, I speak of the comic itself. Wildcats covert action teams. I speak of issue one of Wildcats. The first miniseries, which I have owned about four times over the years.
I have never owned it because it's shit!
It's not.
Tell us why it's good, Andy.
Okay, well, for starters,
I mean, I like the trading cards.
It's got trading cards in it. Yeah. There's two trading cards in the middle, still on the printer crop mark, so that if you get a nice guillotine, you get a nice...
Even more exclusive before. Give me that guillotine now, so I may chop my head off.
Well, basically, what's the high concept behind Wildcats? Well, basically, it's generally a superhero book after he and the Image founding partners said to Marvel, Sajit, we're going off on our own, and formed a artist-driven, creator-owned studio for a while. It's easy to kick lumps out of Image. It's easy to do so.
I can do that with no problem.
So basically, what's the setup? Wildcats is kind of trying to get a superhero thing hook with something new. So the upshot is, there's like an alien war that's been going on Earth, unknown for centuries, from chaps called Daemonix, who big demony looking alien chaps, and basically they're fighting against the sort of the goody versions of them called the Caribou. And it starts off with a scene showing something in 1980 in US Research Station Zebra in Antarctica. That's right, Ice Station Zebra. Someone likes the films. And it flashes to basically sort of giving you some backstory. You see one of the characters called Void shouting something about giving me the orb, you don't comprehend its power, then kind of melting away. This becomes clear in later issues. You then go back to the future, which is towards the end of what takes place in the end of this first issue, and you see her kind of teleport again as there's a big explosion. Then you go to basically the title, which is Resurrection Day, and you have a small chap, literally, of stature called Jacob Marlowe, who's sleeping in the streets rough, and people are ganging up and going to come up. And suddenly he goes, no! And some energy comes out of his hands. So we try to beat him up, and then the Void person appears, who is basically a woman in skin-tight, shiny clothing, cross-action drawn like by Jim Lee. She says, you're one of the champions of mankind, the Lord Imp. Give me your hand and we'll sort stuff out. And goes, your life will never be the same again. Now the next page has exactly the same thing, him sleeping rough in the streets. But the upshot is he goes to a nice, shiny, massive skyscraper, gets in, and while he's in the lift, his attendees make him clean and presentable again.
Really?
He's assembling a team to train, and it's basically just setting the tone. You have, obviously, Spartan, who is basically Cyclops. You've got Maul, who is the big, strong guy. Warblade, who has big, knivey hands, your Wolverine analogue. And basically, then it flashes to the villains of the piece, the Demonites, you've got Hellspawn, and you then end up in a strip joint to get one of the other ones called Voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 90s, it's Jim Lee stuff. Now, I always liked his work, fantastic storyteller. His art is unfortunately maligned more so from the people that aped him rather than found a style of their own, more than any inadequacies in his work.
Well, no.
What's the inadequacies in Jim Lee's work?
I never see it.
You don't like it. That's subjective.
I looked at the pages and I didn't know what was going on half the time, and I didn't like all the scratchiness and detail. And it didn't really flow. And other characters didn't really emote. And I just never liked it. The Gestalt was split. I'm sorry.
It ends with Dan Quayle being a bad guy. There's your 90s reference.
Oh, Dan Quayle, ever heard of him? Jesus Christ.
He stopped being vice president.
No, what did he do after that? Did he become a supervillain?
I'm assuming he probably just became a company director, so yeah, supervillain.
I choose to believe he went to farm chickens.
But, no, Jim Lee's art, it is good. I've always enjoyed it, I've always liked his work. Again, I can see you don't have to necessarily like it, but unlike the people that imitated him, he was good.
Mm.
That's the qualifier. Mm. Look at the many people that used to trace his art and basically copy panels.
No, I'll give you that. The many imitators did not help. And many people imitated the worst aspects of his artwork. But I never enjoyed his artwork then or now. I think he improved as a storyteller quite a bit in the early 2000s when he came back to the Batman. And the style was still not entirely to my taste. The storytelling was much better, and he, for a brief period of time, learned how to keep to a fecking schedule, which is another reason why I'm not a huge fan of Jim Lee. I don't have any time for him as a superstar artist. I don't have any time for his artwork. I do have time for chocolate peanut butter Kit-Kats, but it has nothing to do with the subject.
You do remember he's also done some Transformers work.
I'm aware he's done some Transformers work. I'm aware of his Transformers covers.
Which covers in particular?
He did the Riffin' with Darkness cover with Galvatron going, like that.
Okay. That's one.
And the other one.
Burns is on the spot!
I didn't expect this interrogation!
Sure. You should expect these things.
I can see it. No! Yes! He did the other one. Oh shit. No! No, I didn't know this was coming! No, I'm not doing it. Anyway.
Okay, so the other cover he did to point out Ralph's inadequacies, which is something I do enjoy too on a regular basis, was the cover with the decapitated clown.
Yes, it's the Defender one, yes, thank you.
Well done for agreeing with me after.
No, because I finally saw it in my head as you were talking about it, and did you not do one of the Titan card covers? No, I didn't, did I?
No,
I didn't. Anyway, just because someone's worked in Transformers doesn't mean I like them.
You don't have to like them, but I was merely testing your knowledge.
Well, at least I got one and a half.
One
or two? One and a half.
No, you got one.
I don't know, in my head, I just couldn't get it out.
Okay, you had one.
One
and
a half.
You had one. Uh-huh. You can easily agree once someone's given you the answer.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But this was pretty much the... When Image launched, it kicked off with Rob Liefeld's Youngblood, then with Spawn. This was the third of the launch books, and actually at that point, probably the biggest, because he'd just come off of X-Men, which had been obviously gangbuster sales.
Yep.
So, Image Month. So we've got the back, Entertainment this month.
Oh.
So, what do you think the best. Oh, it's graphic novels, that doesn't talk. But, let's have a look. But it's Pimping Spider-Man 2099.
Yay!
But Professor X is mortally wounded in the X-Men vow revenge in this new 12-part story. Apparently it's a can't miss and highly recommended.
I think that's for this.
Executioner Song, gotta love it.
Oh, isn't it out as some sort of exclusive, super expensive hardcover now?
I got the trade on most of the individual issues anyway.
Why? Shit!
Some bits of it were alright.
Shit!
But one of the mega hits is X-Men Animated number 1 with...
Oh, the Wild Man?
With Wild Man.
Oh, the Wild Man. I could never hate anything that's got the Wild Man. Except for the bit they drew of Avengers The Crossing.
You can't hate that bit, you just had to hate Avengers The Crossing because it's fucking awful.
No.
But it's basically, this is kind of, here's an image in the little bits of, on the back of this. You have, as I said, Spawn's already came out, so just running through a little sidebar, you've got Brigade, all new radical group of mutant heroes by Rob Liefeld. Cyberforce, a new team of mutant heroes.
Shit!
The Savage Dragon, all new violent superhero. By the dragon. It's not to everyone's taste, but...
I've never got into it, but I can't say it's bad. It's just not for me.
Yes. But again, not everything is for everybody, so... Mm-hmm. But it's important to remember, Eric Larson, out of all of them, is the only one that's kind of stuck to his guns.
Pretty much, yeah.
And while I may disagree with many of his opinions, he also gets my respect for being able to keep a book pretty much monthly. And those times he hasn't, it's because he's away doing other things.
Yep.
You generally will have some book out on the shelves every month from Eric Larson.
He does have a work ethic.
Then you've got Shadowhawk.
Shit!
Which is sadly by Jim Valentino, who... Apart from the sort of autobiographical stuff in Norman, did probably one of my favourite 90s Marvel books, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm.
Which, his work has been criminally uncollected in that.
Well, I suspect what with some film coming in 2 years, you'll get quite a lot of trades suddenly appearing between now and then.
I bloody hope so.
I'm fairly sure that you'll get it all.
And you've got Spawn. Points issue 4 and 5. I don't mind it.
Shit!
I don't like it.
Shit! I don't need to explain myself.
Oh, you should.
No! Because no!
When it sounds like you're saying shit, it sounds like someone's getting a finger up to the knuckles.
Because that's what it feels like reading a Spawn comic. Oh, shit!
Actually,
the only good thing to come up with Spawn was the cartoon was well-crafted. It was a well-crafted cartoon. Low... I didn't care about main character stuff. It wasn't a bad cartoon. I did actually watch most of it and thought, that's alright. Then there was a live action Spawn film. Which I haven't seen since back in the day.
I went to the cinema to see that.
I didn't see it in the cinema, but I did rent it on VHS. That's right, kids. VHS. As soon as it came out, because I wanted to see it in the cinema, because
you know,
a comic book film, and it had a guy from Apocalypse Now.
Martin Sheen.
Who I always liked anime, even before The West Wing. And I just didn't get a chance to see it, just the way things were going. But I did rent it in the VHS as soon as it came out. I was like, yeah, here we go. And it was just like, no, it was shit. So in that respect, it was quite an accurate representation of the source material, shall we say.
It was also one of the first really big CG films for effects.
I remember when we went to hell and I was like watching a SNES game.
It just looked like the world's shittiest heavy metal video.
I did like the guy playing Spot.
Michael J. White.
Yeah, he was fine.
Yep. But actually, the shittest Spawn comic is bizarrely, it's the one that Frank Miller wrote. I speak of Spawn 11.
I haven't read that one.
I'll track it down for you.
No, I don't.
I guess in the cupboard.
No.
Because the Alan Moore one's good, because it's the Nine Circles of Hell.
Yeah, no.
I've
not read the Alan Moore ones. I can't comment on that.
Because that's when he got the four writers to kind of do it, because he was getting kicked to bits for not being able to write.
Yes.
So you had Alan Moore did the Nine Circles of Hell and the sort of Spawn Fantastical. It's actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You have Neil Gaiman doing Angela, which led to a lot of lawsuits.
I believe so, allegedly.
No one did. Lawsuits happened. Then you have Dave Sim doing a thing about creator-owned and creator rights, because it's the one issue that never gets reprinted.
Mm.
All of the Spawn reprints, that one doesn't get done. And issue 11 is Frank Miller doing street gangs with horrible dialogue.
Yeah, also advertised it was Brigade.
Yes.
It was shit.
We ran through that.
I know, I'm just reminding myself. Did you mention Youngblood?
No, I was just coming to that.
Mm.
Which... I want to read the Joe Casey recut stuff because I imagine it will be actually very entertaining, because Joe Casey is a really good writer and does some of the most intelligent and challenging superhero books. The criminally overlooked Automatic Kafka, Wildcats 3.0, which it's in trade and it's also available cheap.
It's only one of them.
Comicsology.
Is that the one that went? I don't think it got finished. I think it got cancelled before it finished. 3.0.
Probably.
I think. I'm sure it never got to its proper ending.
No, I don't think it got truncated before. They had an ending, but not the ending. I don't think. It's well worth reading. And also, he did X-Men at the same time as Grant Morrison was on the book, so overlooked. Well worth checking out his stuff.
Well, talking of checking it, we're entering the death of the podcast, which means it's time for shit. You may recall on the last exciting episode, talking about the Uncanny X-Men at the...
Dallas State Fair.
Dallas State Fair, that's right. Now, when this comic was originally procured, it came unexpectedly in a two-pack. It was in the plastic sheath type thing.
He speaks of a Mylar bag and not a condom.
Thank you.
We don't advocate comic smuggling.
We do not. Not that way. And when I pulled out the comic, it came with an extra special one, which someone had thrown in. Beneath this Alan Kuperberg cover of 1982, we have issue one of a series of one. So it was a one-shot of another Marvel comic, another obscure Marvel comic, called Obnoxio the Clown versus the X-Men. Obnoxio the Clown, that is correct. And where to begin? The cover features, well, a clown, funnily enough, who a disagreeable chap in a sort of green and red polka dot outfit. He's got a cigar, he looks very angry, and he's saying something. He's saying, "Hiya kids, we're yellow and black and don't behave no more," he says, and he holds a fallen X-Man in his hands. And there's a lot of asterisk after "no more," and if you turn the comic upside down, it reveals he means a dead school bus.
Oh ho ho!
Oh ho ho! So, I'm not sure the clown in this comic from April 1983. There's a few things to point out. First of all, he's created by Larry Hama. You may know Larry Hama from G.I. Joe.
And
Wolverine.
Nth Man.
Nth Man
the Ultimate Ninja.
Nth Man the Ultimate Ninja. But mostly, you'll know him from G.I. Joe. Which, when it was good, it was good. When it was bad, it was very bad. But when it was good, it was quite a good comic. The scripts, art, letters and colours are all by Alan Kuperberg.
Dick.
You may recall from a previous...
I'm sure he's a lovely human being, but those two issues of Transformers still boil my piss.
He does not one, but two Obnoxio the Clown comics in this publication. Larry Hammer also edits it. And these are the only credits. They do actually make use of the indicia by writing a very unfunny joke, which goes on in great length. And generally, it's about a foul-mouthed clown. Which,
or as foul-mouthed as you can be under the Comics Code Authority.
So, he's a chap in a story. There's two stories. The first one's called Something Slimy This Way Comes, where he narrates it as well, and he's a clown who's come on bad times. He's out being foul-mouthed. Meanwhile, Professor X has directed a dangerous mutant nearby, which, oh, could it be Obnoxio the Clown? The computer overloads and explodes. Cyclops runs in, finds Professor X is unconscious, but oh, look out at the door, it's Obnoxio the Clown. He's here to do mischief. He's here to huff and puff and blow up their house. He finds a trap door, he falls into it. Cyclops, the X-Man, he runs in, he gets Angel, Sprite, Colossus, Nightcrawler, Wolverine and Storm to come and help him do it. They try and go and do stuff. There's an advert for candy. You can tell I'm enthused by this. I'm not sure the clown broken into the sub-basement.
I went back to reading Wildcats.
Yeah, he's broken into the sub-basement. He's making some gags, which are in no way funny at all. Then he blows in. He attacks them. Meanwhile, there's a mysterious man in black who's taken advantage of Obnoxio the Clown to break into the danger room itself. Then the clown fights the X-Men. And then the mysterious... man in black, he tries to take control of it. The clown keeps fighting the X-Men. It goes on for quite some time. Absolutely nothing of any interest happens. There is, however, an advert for the comic convention. The comic convention features tons of old and new comics, Marvel, DC's, for sale. It takes place in Philadelphia. Manhattan, Boston, and Chicago. So if you're in the year 1983, you go down and see that. So they fight, and the clown sort of defeats him. He runs away, makes Wolverine swear, that's the end. But before your second exciting Alan Cooperberg story, you have Obnoxio the Clown's abuse page, where people write into the clown, tell him stuff, and he slangs him off. Not a bad idea, brilliantly executed. Done better on the Transformers UK letter page.
By Simon Furman.
By Simon Furman when he was Grimlock. And now we pass you over to Judy Judy, the second story, which Andy will regale you with.
Oh, God.
Indeed.
Judy Judy or Oi the Journey, again, Copperberg. So, he's on a subway.
Is this a clown chap?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's wandering through, and he's gone to his house, he's got to sit down, and he's got a summons for Judy Judy. And he's bitching about it, and he goes to head to court to basically say, I don't want any of this pish.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up in the waiting room. And sits in between people and starts talking as they're sitting amongst themselves. And it's just bloody awful.
So generally.
And it turns out that he goes into a random corridor and he sees that people are trying to steal things. They're taking evidence. So basically the trials will collapse. And he kind of fights them off and stops it in a kind of pseudo-heroic fashion by being obnoxious and doing stuff.
Hence his name.
And basically just trying to get out of Judy Judy.
Right, I've done Judy Judy, you know.
And then so he sits back down at the end and then picks at his mail and bitches about all his bills. And that's the end of it. Then there's a letter, kind of, he's reading a letter he's been sent in called Dear Flabby. And it kind of pimps some comics as well from Marvel. And there's a cameo from Jim Shooter and Stan Lee and Copperberg and it's just fucking awful.
Yeah.
And then there's some fun pages with some shit.
Yeah. I mean,
this has been really, really depressing.
Yeah. we've learned two things from this comic in particular. First thing we've learned is that sometimes things can be obscure for a very, very, very good reason. Obnoxio the Clown is, look it up on the internet, you really won't find much. It's justifiably obscure.
And also, Alan Copperberg is not funny.
And secondly, we've also learned that every great creative has a golden turd within them, ready to be laid at any time. Except for Simon Furman. Because I can never, ever, ever say anything bad about Simon Furman. Ever.
I'm just going to go back to Wildcats for a moment, just to really... For those of you who collect and read comics, there was one of the ads, and it's kind of like, here's how you can get some comics. Some cost 75 cents.
Oof.
Some cost $2.
Oof.
Some cost $1, $1.50, $3, $5, and then there's the premium ones.
Mm-hmm.
Now...
What was the premium?
Okay.
What year was this again?
This is 1992.
Okay.
These range from between $10 to $25. Issue 248 is the most expensive at $25.
Uh-huh.
Which is the first Jim Lee artwork.
Right.
Which at the time had a cachet.
It did indeed.
But... apparently, Dark Hawk issue 1 will cost you $15 and is, and is limited to one purchase only.
Oh, Dark Hawk, you make children cry.
X-Force 1, a set of all 5 with cards, $15.
X-Force 1, for context, kids, in the space year 2012, you will never go to any comic mart or fair or convention of any kind and not find multiple copies of X-Force. One bagged. But it has 50 pence, but yes. Multiples. Even as recently as Glasgow Comic Con 2012, just a couple of months ago, I found 5 different bagged copies of that in the 50 pence.
Well, there are 5 different
trading cards. Yeah, exactly. Oh, I could have got them all. Shit. And that has indeed been the word. So we could continue with this catalogue of despair, or we could let you return to your lives.
Yes, because quite frankly, we're about to cry after the RoboCop Dark
So Justice. You will return in 2 weeks' time for more comic and viewable related tat, so it's goodbye from me!
But
I want to say goodbye!
You can say goodbye in a minute.
I thought, what?
We need to where they can find us on it.
Oh, we didn't do that last time.
We didn't, I know as well.
You can find me in a pit of despair. And alternatively, at Star Dubbing on Twitter, or this podcast is on star-dub.com, on the iTunes, and also on the Nerdsphere blog.
You can find me at all of those self-same places as well, and also my Twitter is Andrew D. Turnbull. So if you've got anything you wish to say, comments, suggestions, hate mail for us dredging up painful childhood memories,
and
that's
then
where
the, that the next exciting episode, I can exclusively reveal that Shits and Giggles will return.
Yes.
As people did actually ask me about it at Auto Assembly. So that exciting feature that about three of you have been on the edge of your seat going, for feck's sake, four episodes and you haven't done it, five if you include the special. We've let it rest for a while, but we're bringing it back. So if you have any suggestions for crazy words, or even normal words preferably, to look up on Google for us to research, we will gladly take that into abeyance, which is a good word.
Again, a wee reminder of the rules, no swear words please, because we do it in a Google say search.
Yes, although we do swear a bit in this, we don't deliberately look for naughty things.
And also, it'd be too easy.
Indeed. So, goodbye!
Farewell!
Well, we've got DVD, it was fucking AIDS.
It was fucking awful.